two cases is muta, right? It's permitted.
Right.
Why is it permitted? Peshitta. Isn't it obvious? Cave in the label, right? If he did not have any intercourse with her, right? Then matonabi alba hu the yahila. So he just gave her a gift. Fartik, that's all. Gave her, right? Vesu. And how about the other case? Bo oleho. If he had intercourse with her, the leino son law, right? He didn't give her anything. So hala yahila. The lo bidi. He didn't give her anything.
Good argument.
Right. The cave of the lay no son law. Myas no no. As long as he didn't give it to her. So what about this money that he, you know, this gift that he had promised her? So it's mutar, it's permissible, right? So if that's the case, what are you gonna do with the pasuk of the Torah? Say the Hochi Kamar. So he said, okay, let's try this. Okay. No son-in-law, right? He gave her the animal, right? The achakach bo oleho, and afterwards he did have intercourse with her. Oh, bo oleho, he had intercourse with her. The achakach no son-in-law es lana, right? And afterwards he gave her her gift. So we say, mutar, it's still permitted. We all say,
that's real thin ice
and skin. It certainly contradicts the plain meaning of the text. There's no question about it. Because we would say what? Both conditions were fulfilled, right?
Going back to some of the things with the wine.
Right.
They're much more stringent with the wine.
To a certain extent, you're right. Not that it means that the man was behaving in a commendable fashion. I mean, let's understand that. They're not trying to to encourage the going to prostitutes. Obviously not. But the question is, it's a technical point of view.
Well, you know,
right, it's a technical point.
The technical point of view.
Right.
Plus in the Torah.
Yeah.
That forbids the
halal
from bringing
in. Right, absolutely. Correct. No question what the Torah says. No question about it. No question what the verse says in the Torah.
Yeah.
But, you know, so the question is, how can he say that it's mutar? This is the problem. How can he say it?
So
I mean, in the first case, you know, we discussed. Obviously, there are two things, right? The gift and the intercourse. So, if he only did one and not the other, so okay, so there's no problem over there.
Yeah.
But if he did both, how can they come and say that's muta, that's permissible? So, right? Right? That he gave her, and then afterwards he had intercourse with her. Right? But, or, if he came, you know, he had intercourse, and afterwards he gave her a gift, the mutar is permissible. Nasallah, the achakach bo'aleha, right, he gave her, and afterwards he had intercourse with her. The last line on the page, right. L'chi bo'aleha, because when he came, in other words, when he had intercourse with her, he continued on the next page, Samach Gimel Amid Aleph, So lichal Allah is esdan lemafreya. Then the prohibition against giving an esdan, you know, against giving the gift to the harlot, right? So this should be retroactively prohibited.
Retroactively.
It should be retroactively prohibited. Lemafreya means as if it were from the very start. Right, as if it were from the very beginning.
So that takes away the argument.
Right. That takes away the argument. They're not happy.
Rabbi Yochanan is not happy.
Right, right. Okay. Right, right. This is what he says, that, okay. However, as we see, as in many cases, there's disagreement, because if you remember, what did we read the few lines before? He said it was mutar, and here it says it's usur because it works retroactive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. The transaction started at the beginning.
Right. So, Omar Rabbi Lazar. So, Rabbi Lazar said, Kishe kotbo ikrifitu, right? Says, you know where it would be acceptable? She got the animal, and she immediately brought it to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? And then, of course, presumably only afterwards, right? Right. So, what he's trying to say is that the idea of retroactive is not
applicable.
It's not applicable. You understand? This is what he's saying. Why?
Rabbi Eliezer is supporting Rabbi Yochanan.
That's correct. He's supporting him. And remember that they said that it was like a parallel, right? What was the parallel to Shavuos? The idea being that in the eighth year, when they repaid, they were not repaying it with fruits of Shavuos, but what were they repaying it with? Fruits of the Shavuos, right, of the eighth year. So that the original thing was already gone. So this way, too, according to this interpretation, she immediately brought it as a sacrifice to the Beis HaMikdash, long before, you know, the deed was done, so that therefore the idea of retroactive action doesn't work over here. This is one explanation.
It's only if she,
right.
Took,
right.
Only if she took the lamb right away,
right.
To the
right.
Beis HaMikdash.
Yeah, right. But as we'll see, even that, they hedge. Okay. They're going to hedge. Hey, Chidami, under what circumstances can we say this? Okay? Under what circumstances can we say, you know, that if she immediately gave it to the Beis HaMikdash and so on? So you say, how does it work? He says, E the Omar law, can ni loch me akshov? If at the time when he gave it to her, he says, you now acquire this from this very moment. Okay? Peshita the Shori, that it's obvious that it is permissible. So let me explain that too. You can't run over here. You have to really you have to really stop on each and every word over here. Where, by the way, we're on Sabach Gimel Amud Aleph at the top of the page. Okay? What is the problem over here? The laws of Kenyan.
No.
Okay.
What? No.
All right? Yeah. The laws of Kenyan are not so simple. You know, we would think that, for example, you go into the store, you buy something, and probably it's all there is to it. So, yeah. That you pay for it, that's it, that's yours, right? According to the law of the Gemara, the way they interpret it, they say it's not really yours even though you've paid the money until you actually take the object to yourself, okay? You have to take it into your possession, okay? So, this is how Kenyan is acquired, okay? That's the general rule. Naturally, there's also clause A and clause B, etc., etc. But this is the general rule, okay? So, all right. So, therefore, if he says, here it is, you now have acquired this as of now. So, in that case, who does it now belong to? Belongs to her. It's no longer his as a gift, you understand? It's now hers. Inasmuch as what? Nothing has happened as yet.
Right.
Right? So, therefore, she's permitted, you know, to give it as a sacrifice in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. this is, you know, how he's explaining it for the monk. Okay? The whole Leisei Bishaspia, because at the time when they finally had the intercourse with her, right, it was no longer there, literally. In other words, no longer in his possession. It's gone, right? Umatoda be'alma me'asha, right? And therefore, it is a gift in general, you know, like any other gift from, you know, from right now, right?
It's
me'asha, right?
The idea that it's payment.
Right.
It's a gift, not a payment.
Correct. But now they raise an objection. They think it's going to go so glatt? No. They say, Heiche motzim mikarva. So tell me, how can we say that really she can offer it as a sacrifice? Because we have another teaching. What does it say at the end of Vayikra over there? It says, Ish ki yakdish is beso kodesh, right? If a person dedicates his house to the Beis HaMikdash, okay? So it becomes holy. In other words, Omer Rachmona, the Torah says, Ma beso birshuso, just as the house must belong to him. In other words, can you dedicate something that doesn't belong to you? No. You want to give a gift to the Beis HaMikdash, you have to give a gift what belongs to you, not what belongs to somebody else. So it has to be in your rishus. So I've called birshuso. So anything that you want to dedicate to the Beis HaMikdash, right, then has to be in your possession. Okay? So if he is giving it to her on the basis, you know, that she's going to give it as a sacrifice to the Beis HaMikdash, how could he do that? It's not his possession. It's whose possession? It's her possession right now, right? Elo, the Amalo, so what must he have said to her? Levegaboch, Ach Asbion. Says, you keep this for the time being with you until the time that I finally have intercourse with you. The E, Mitzvah, Leoch, Kedime Yashav. But if you have need of it before that time comes, then you have now acquired it as of this very moment. So now it's your property. Okay. Yeah. So far it looks pretty good, right? So boy Rav Hishaya, so Rav Hishaya said, Kodmo the Hikdishis of Mahu. He says, what would happen if before anything happens, right, she decides to dedicate it to the Beis HaMikdash. Kevin the Umamar, inasmuch as our rabbi has taught us that Amirasai le Gavaya Kibsirasai le Hedyot, right? This is a general principle that if you say, in other words, if you make a commitment, a verbal commitment, or even a commitment in your heart, really, that you're going to dedicate something to the Beis HaMikdash, right? Then in that particular case, we say it's as if you had already handed over the object. So the hedyot means like what normally, you know, you give a gift to somebody else, what do you do? So you give it over and he takes possession of it. But if you say, I want to dedicate this to the Beis HaMikdash, then that's it. You don't even have to bring it yet, because from the moment that you said, I want to dedicate this, so automatically it's dedicated. It's already holy. It's Kodesh already. Yeah. So the question is, I mean, so this animal already is Kodesh, right? So, Keman der Kritive Domi. So it says, if it had already been sacrificed, and in the meantime, however, where is it? It's with her. It's with her right now. Right. Oh. Dilma, or maybe let's figure out another way. Hashto miho, at the moment, he says, Hokai the isei v'ene. Where is the animal? It's still there. It hasn't budged, right? It's still in her possession, right? The tifshot with the Rabbi Elazar, and maybe we can explain the statement of Rabbi Elazar, the Omer Rabbi Elazar, she caught by the Hikrifu Dafka, says Dafka, it's specifically if actually she already made the first move and she dedicated it or sacrificed it. But what happened if she brought it, the Hikrivitu, Avol Hikdishto, right? If she had sacrificed it, she had not dedicated it, even though she gave it to the Beis HaMikdash, says, hello. It says, no, the Rabbi Eliezer says, it doesn't work out that way, he says. So we're actually in a bit of a quandary at this point, because how does it work? Do we say that, you know, if he had not had intercourse with her, then we just said before, okay, she could offer it because it's been given to her as a gift, it's on her reshus and everything else and so on. But if he has intercourse with her, does it act retroactively or not? Obviously, there's a difference of opinion as to this. And if it does act retroactively, then in that case, it is Esnan Zona, which he's prohibited to do.
Right.
So this is the dilemma right now. So what he's trying to say over here is, well, sure, Kodma Vikrifto, Hikrivosa, really, Dafka, Hikrivosa. Right. We're talking about where she actually brought it herself to the Beis HaMikdash, and in that particular case, it's all right. Avol Hikdishasa, lo. But if she had dedicated it only but not brought it to Beis HaMikdash, then in that particular case, it would not be acceptable, right?
Yeah.
In other words, before we said that if a person dedicates, it's like Amira Sola Gavoa, right? The Kamisira Sola Hedyon. But he doesn't accept it in this particular case. He says, if she had actually brought it, it's one thing. It's there, based on Mikdash, and it would be accepted. But if she had only decided to dedicate it, without bringing it yet, then in that particular case, the Beis HaMikdash would not accept it,
yep.
Period, and so on.
So where do we stand?
We stand,
I
would stand according to what the Torah says. Don't have anything to do with it. It's bad business, bad business.
Right.
Legal prostitution or something like that.
They must
because it's legal in certain states doesn't mean that therefore it's praiseworthy, you understand? I mean, this we have to understand. It's not right. That's all. Right.
Onward.
Right. Okay. Eliezer Gufe called the Bayale. So it's Rabbi Eliezer himself mixed up. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't certain in his own mind what the resolution is, right? Nifshab Shitalei, the Rabbi Eliezer, the Krivosu Davka. He says, apparently, according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's clear, he says, that if she had actually brought the animal to the Beis HaMikdash, and in that particular case, it would be acceptable. Avol Hikdishasa, lo, right? But if she just dedicated it, she said, you know, that I want to give it as a sacrifice, no. Deho Yisei B'Shas B'Yam, because the animal is still there at the time when he has the intercourse, right? But he says, oh, Dilma, maybe no, maybe it's different. Dilma, right, he says, Hikrivasu Pshitale, yeah. He's certain that if she brought it, that's okay, would be acceptable. The Hikdish Shosei, Vesapkalei. Maybe he's in doubt as to whether if she dedicated it, whether it would be acceptable or would not be acceptable. So what do they say? They say, Teiku. We can't decide.
After all that, no decision.
No decision, right.
Teiku.
All right. Well, we're not finished with that yet. Okay.
Very good.
Yeah. Right? If he had intercourse with her and then he gave her the gift, right? Muto is permissible. Well, how can the company make a statement like that? We have a contrary statement. Namely, if he had intercourse with her, the achar kach nosan lo, and afterwards he gave her this gift. Even if it happened 3 years later that he finally came around and gave her the animal, right? It's not also. It is prohibited.
Who's saying it's the Baraisa?
It's a different Baraisa, right. The previous one came from the Gemara Bechoros. This one comes from the Gemara Temura. And, obviously it represents two different points of view. So now that's why they say, hey, there's another point of view about the right. Teiku. We don't know what's in the mind of Rabbi Eliezer, so that's the point. That's what the Teiku is. But as I said, we're not finished yet with this idea, right? So we have this contrary one that even 3 years afterwards, if he gave her the gift, then automatically it's no good. It's not Zedon. So Omar Rav Nachman. Rav Yitzchok said in the name of Rav Chisda, he says, Lekash, he said, it's not a difficulty. We can straighten out the contradiction between the two. We can do it. Ha, the Omar Hizbali Li, Bitolezeh. All right. What did he say to her? If he said to her, I want you to have relations with me for this particular lamb, right? So that's one possibility. And the other is, Hodom Allah is Bali Bitola. Stop. The other alternative is that he said to her, I want you to have relations with me for a lamb. In other words, in one case he says, for this lamb,
this specific one,
and the other one simply says, for a lamb, some, but not, anonymous, okay? An anonymous sheep, or anonymous lamb. V'chi omar lo betolez my hada. Now, but they're still not happy with it, right? They say, and if he said to her, I want you to have relations with me for this particular lamb, my hava. So what? On the chasa meshicha. He didn't yet do what? What do I say? For Kenyan is required. Not only, a promise to give, but actually what? Meshicha. She has to take possession of it. So she hasn't taken possession of it as yet. When he says, have relations with me, right? So they say, Bezoino Yevedes Chechobim, the Lake Hanyabim Sheikh, he says, I'll tell you, the prostitute was not a Jewish girl, was a Jewish woman, but it was an idolater. A Sheikh Sargoya, right? And with them, the law of Meshicha is not operative. Instead, you pay your guilt and that's it, it's automatic, and that's
he's
it.
He's not going to go give a lamp to the altar.
Right. So that, obviously, it won't work, right? The Yiboy Seima, and if you wish, you can say as follows. Le'olam Zed Yisrael. So now we're talking about what? A Jewish prostitute. Right. Uchigod, and for example, Tekai Bechatzeira. Where is the animal? if actually the animal's there in her yard, then that's also a way of kinyan. It's also a way.
Possession, right?
Possession, exactly. This is why, for example, it's not the right way to do it, but nevertheless, if a man wrote a get, I mean, now I'm talking from a technical point of view, we don't accept that today, but right. Technically, I mean, it's possible. And, you know, he has to deliver the get to the woman, obviously, to the wife, otherwise it's not binding, right? So,
she has to accept it.
She has to accept it. But if he just throws it into the yard where she is standing over there, that's already considered that it's okay.
That she was
right. Accepted. That's as if she had accepted because her chotzer, her yard, acquires it for her. It's within her daladabas, within her reshus, in other words. Okay?
She doesn't have to pick it up or
it's all. No. As I say, we don't pass in that way today. That's not the way we do things. But back in the old days, it was an acceptable practice. Okay? So I'm pointing out, I mean, this is a parallel situation over here to that, right? Pardon me? Yeah, right, of course. Yeah, right. It's right. Dalai Lama's is you have a 6 feet circumference, right?
But if you drop
it 100 meters away, it might not be considered Dalai Lama's. Right, right. So it should be close enough to her, obviously. Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. So it could go into Kaivachat Seva, right? So as if it were actually standing there in her own courtyard. So they say, well, and if the animal is standing there in her yard, he had intercourse with her, the Yachakach Dorsadlo, right? And afterwards he gave her the animal. In other words, here, the second statement really presupposes that the animal is there. The animal is there. He hasn't yet made the promise. But he says, right? He has intercourse. And then he says, hey, this is yours, right? Or Kanyula, right? She has now acquired it. So he says, Lord Smicha, no, we need it for a different case. Dishave nihala apoteke. He says, he made the animal. He didn't give it to her immediately. But what is it? He put it aside as a security that afterwards it would be used as payment for her. The Amar Lo, he said to her, E my sinoloch, if I come to you, right? My sinoloch Zuze, right? If I would give you the money, if I give you Zuze, you know, if I give you money, you know, like the Zabin Abba Bistri Zuse, right? Okay, so he says, if I'll give you the geld afterwards, right? So, Mekan Ad Yom Pleni, from this day until a certain specified date, by this and this particular date, Mutav, okay. Then in that case, what? Then the animal is only standing there, so therefore he has not yet really he hasn't relinquished the animal yet because he says that, you know, he's going to give her money by a certain date. The ELO, however, if I don't pay you yet the money, you know, by the date that I say, then in that case, so that particular case, then you take it and that will be your payment. Okay, so in that case, what? So, in that case, we have to assume again that it is not right, right? So, it became an Esnad Zona. For the moment that he said, you know, this is security for you, so that already made it into an Esnad Zona when he had intercourse with her subsequently. All right, we'll stop over here at this particular point tonight, because we go back again to the problem of Shvius, beginning the bottom of the page. Okay? It is the 13th of June in the year 2007. We continue now at the very bottom of Samach Gimel, Omid Aleph, Tractate of it is over. Okay. We come back again to the problem of Shvius, as I mentioned the last moment of our share last week. I want to tell you again, we had quite a discussion about Shvius 2 weeks ago, if you remember, and it's very, very appropriate because we are this year already anticipating that next year, beginning with Rosh Hashanah, is going to be Shvius. And in Eretz Yisrael, as I told you, it presents a tremendous problem, okay? Because food, you know, for anything that grows in the field in Eretz Yisrael, whether it's fruit, vegetables, grains, whatever it may be, you know, it has to be left hefker. You're not allowed to do any business with it, and so on and so forth. So the question is, Ma'adoichal, what are we going to eat, right? So that presents a tremendous problem. As I told you, there are two different ideas among the from Jews and Eretz Israel as to what to do. One of them is that of the what we call the Haredim, in other words, the very Orthodox, you know, the yeshiva groups, the Hasidic groups, and so on.
Are that, the Haredim, does yeah. that refer to Hasidim as well?
Yes.
I thought it was the
religious,
but not Hasidic.
Yeah, well, right. I'm using it in a loose sense.
Right, but generally
in the more strict sense, it's what we would call the yeshiva or the litvisha or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, that's correct.
Orthodox,
right,
not,
right.
Not
but in a more general sense, it means in general. I mean,
but
both them and also the right the Hasidim as well. Yeah. So at any rate, they will not have anything to do. So what did they do in previous years? In previous years, as I told you, they would buy stuff from the Arabs. Okay? This is what they would do. Buy stuff from the Arabs. Or, of course, they would use canned stuff. You know, and that could come from anywhere. You know. So, what is the problem this year?
Do not have Arabs to buy?
Well, you have a big problem with the Arabs. Exactly what the problem is. Those who follow the more modern Orthodox interpretation in general have relied upon the heter of the Rabot Rashid that they ostensibly sell the land of Eretz Yisrael to a goy, and because then it's not Jewish owned land, so then it's permitted to be worked and you're permitted to have the results. So there was an article in the very latest Jewish press by Stephen Walls. He's a very important, very, very wise reporter who's, you know, is an observant man, modern Orthodox. He lives in Eretz Yisrael. And he mentions that this year there is talk that the chief rabbis and also from the Haredi element should get together once and for all and permit, you know, work out some sort of an agreement, because how can you rely upon the Arabs?
Right.
You don't know what to go to Gaza and grow things over there and then buy the stuff that they produce over there. Who is going to risk his life as a Jew in order to go in? How can you send a mashgiach over there? He's taking his life in his hands. And the same thing, of course, would be true even in Eretz Israel. Can you trust the Arabs? And if you give them the business,
right,
are they going to use that money in order to support Hamas and things
right.
like that? You
or
understand?
If you sell your
right.
property to
yeah.
them, will you ever get it back?
Well, that's another problem. Right. That's why I say it's,
yeah, I mean,
it's more a fictitious sale, I mean, than
yeah,
a real
still,
sale.
You know,
right.
Right.
They pay some selling.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
It's like the Chris Chavitz, you know. It's
yeah.
a legal fiction.
Yeah.
Right. But this was originated by Harav Kook back even before the First World War, I believe.
Can they import
because
it from another country?
Yes. Oh, yeah, you can import food. That's not a problem. Right. As I say, canned food. So now, of course, they're also trying to work on hydroponics because you're not growing it in the soil itself of Eretz Israel. You understand? So they're trying to rely upon that. Also, there are parts of Eretz Israel which were not originally part of biblical Eretz Israel. You know, the Bible speaks about Eretz Israel being from Dan to Beersheba, right? But let's say the area which was south of Beersheba, areas in the Negev or in the Arava, as they call it over there, so which technically you could grow and bring it in or something.
I have a question.
Yes.
Yeah, a hydroponic, how do you say, for
your age? You're right.
Yeah.
Good question.
But they've been doing hydroponics for a very long time.
Yes. Yeah. That,
I was there in the 70s.
Right.
And some of the kibbutzim were very
right.
much into hydroponics.
Yeah. Right, right, right.
Shakol?
So you say Shakol?
Yeah.
Because you're right, I mean, it doesn't quite fit.
Yeah, right.
<good. laughs>
Interesting.
Okay, right. Okay, so now the Gemara comes back again to Shmias. And if you remember, what was the question with Shmias? That we had earlier. Okay.
Total question.
Yeah, it comes back again to the business, you know, that we learned, A, that Shmias is it's la'chila v'loy l'schora, right? La'chila v'loy l'schora. In other words, Shmias is you can eat, but you're not allowed to do any business with it.
Okay,
that's what we learned. We also learned that in the school of Rav Yadai, they decided that they would help out the poor people in the year of Shvias by borrowing produce from them, as Rashi explains, before the time of Biur. Biur, remember I told you, this is the period when once there's nothing left in the field, then you have to take everything that you have in your house and then put it out in the field and it becomes hefker to everybody. You can take it for yourself, but everybody else is also willing to come and take it, okay? So, they borrowed fruit from them, if you remember, and then when did they repay it? They repaid it in the 8th year, in other words, the year after Shavuos, okay? And it was done in order to help out the poor people. So, it was God's fine. But on the other hand, I don't have to tell you that there's always a critic.
Where would the poor people get it? So I don't understand. They're borrowing from the poor people.
They borrowed this fruit, but they repaid it with food in the 8th year, in the following year.
Yeah, but I'm saying, where would the poor people get the lenders?
No, they had their own plots or something like that. So before it became time, you know, to declare everything hefker, so they could have in their house stored up yet, and so from them they borrowed it. Then they returned the food that they had borrowed. I don't mean, you know, the same, but you know, a similar kind of food to them in the 8th year when Shvius was over. And the whole idea behind that was that at the time of Shvius they weren't doing any business. That was the idea. They were not doing any business. Because if they had done business, then the whole scheme would have been kaput, okay? So that this is the what they're going back to right now. So that's the Rav Sheshes. The Rav Sheshes was not very happy. He quotes a different Tosefta in this particular case. Okay. Says, Omer Odom Lachamorov Ulfayalov, a man can say to his donkey drivers and to his workers, go out and eat with his dinner. Of course, the dinner is, you know, it's a coin, denarius, yeah, the lamp, okay, which I am giving you. And so, go out and drink with this, go out and eat with the Bedidonza, you know, and to Shasubidonza, and go and buy drinks, right, with this Didar. Yeno Cheshesh, and the Balabas doesn't have to worry that what? Next page, right, next slide. Lo Mishum Shmiyas doesn't have to worry either that he is violating Shmiyas, but Lo Mishum Maaser, nor that there is a violation of the Maaser. Lo Mishum Yein Nesach, nor about Yein Nesach. What doesn't he have to worry about? He doesn't have to worry about that, first of all, when he gives him this money, right? So they're not going to use it in order to buy food of Shviyas. Okay? That's how Rashi explains it. Because Rashi quotes a Mishnah, which says over there that Ein Mosrin de Mei Peiro Shviyas, the Am Ha'oretz, says to be given us with us. You see, they figure that scholars, they knew what was right and what was wrong. But they were afraid of what? Of the Am Ha'oretz, the Am Ha'oretz, right? You know, ordinary people, after all, who do they have doing the work? And Am Ha'oretz, I mean, in general, they didn't have scholars who were working for them. I don't say that scholars didn't work, but I'm saying that, you know, the average worker was probably more identified as an Am Ha'oretz, you understand?
You're talking about usually the term Am Ha'oretz is referred to as an ignorant person.
That is correct. Right.
So
the time of the Talmud, this is what it is. In the Bible, it's a different story. In the Bible, it really refers to, we would say, the better classes of society. It's strange how these things happen. Rashi quotes, you know, the Mishnah, which says that you do not give money, you know, for food and shviyas to an Am Ha'oretz more than what he could use in order to buy three meals. Because once you give him more than that, then the suspicion is that what? He's going to use it in order to do business with them. And again, what is the principle behind it? Not to do business with shviyas. Money in order to buy food that he needs? Yeah, fine. But not so much, you know, that he'll be tempted in order to go and to buy more and then, you know, sell it or something like that. Not to do business. Okay. And what about Meiser that we're talking about? Meiser, okay. Again, who are we talking about over here? You know, you have different Meisers, right? You have a Meiser Rishon, which was given to the Levi, to be
exact.
Right, supposed to be given to Levi, okay. And the Kohen gets Truba, and the Levi gets Meiser, okay. And then the Levi has to give to the Kohen a Meiser of the Meiser. In other words, one tenth from what he has received, okay. That's called Truba's Meiser, okay. So, at any rate, they suspected that the Am Ha'oretz, you know, that they were not that careful about it. But he says, you don't have to worry about it in this particular case. First of all, if you remember that the Maaseres run really in 6-year cycles, and so presumably then the 7th year, you shouldn't have to worry about Maaser, because the 7th year, the stuff doesn't belong to you. It's Hefker. Do you understand what I mean? So, yes.
He's giving the money in the first case.
Right.
To the workers.
To the workers,
in
right,
the second
exactly.
In the case, he's giving it to the storekeeper.
No, not yet. We didn't get to the storekeeper yet. Yeah. So far, we're talking about the worker. The worker is an Am Ha'oretz, presumably. Okay? We don't have to worry, however, that there will be a violation of Shviyas on the part of the Balabas who gave them the money, either that they're going to buy fruit that was grown in Shvi, so do business in it, as we said before, because we give them enough for three meals for the day. But, you know, they don't pay. In those days, by the way, they didn't pay by the week. How did they pay normally? They paid daily. Torah tells us, you know, that
right.
That you have to pay the sakhar, you know, the wages of a worker the day that he works. I mean, he puts in a day's work, pay him. It's the way, you know, the Torah advises us to do, okay? And we wouldn't suspect either that he's going to violate the rules of Miser, because, as I said, in the Shvi, it's the seventh year, Misers in general are not operative. That's only they work in a 6-year cycle. That the, you
but
know
that
you have
means
right.
The Kohen and the Levi go out and get the food that he
they have to, of course.
Oh.
Of course.
Uh-huh.
And even when they were given gifts, they still had to go and get. Not every Kohen and every Levi was a rich person. You understand? Very often they were poor people themselves, so they had to supplement whatever people gave them as their priestly dues or as their Levitical dues, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Nor do you have to work for Yaidesach, he says. He says, and even if they're goyish workers, right? So that indirectly, what is he doing? He gives them the geld and they're spending it on Yaidesach, right? And therefore we would say, you know, that he, since he contributed to them spending the money on Yenesach and so on, but we say that he doesn't have to worry about it, that nobody is going to charge him with that as a violation either.
No, it's not a violation.
No.
So not in
the seventh year.
If it's a goy, for
right,
example,
right.
He's entitled, he can drink anything he wants.
Yes, so he is. The question is, but we'll see, you know, there's going to be a question that they're going to argue about as to whether indirectly we are helping the goy, you know, and if we help the goy to idolatry, are we therefore also guilty of, you know, that. So this is a big problem. So he says, okay, the Imam Alahem, but if he said to them, Se'uvi Ichlu Vani Pareya, he says, go out and eat, and I'll pay the bill for you. Se'u Shesu Vani Pareya, right? Or go out and drink and I'll pay the bill for you, then Choshesh Mishum Shvi, so Mishum Maaser, Mishum Yenesach. So he should be concerned in that particular case that they'll go out and taka, since, you know, it's not coming out of their pocket, but the boss himself has paid for it. So in that particular case, they may be tempted to do what? To buy a pair of shmius and so on and so forth, because the boss has no control over the money in this particular case. Before, what did he say to them? Here is this money, and I'm giving this to you on condition that you go out and do this and this and this. But if he says, right. But if he says, But if he says, I'll pay the bill to somebody and you simply go and take and do whatever you want with it and so on and so forth, but in that particular case we have no guarantee that they won't, you see. So this is what the situation is at this particular moment. So he says Almo, so the Gemara says, as a result, he kopara the may iser kopara, when he's paying the money for their food or for their drinks, then in reality what he's doing in this particular case, he's paying it with money which is prohibited, because this money is being used in order to violate Shavuos. So Ochaname, in this case too, ki kapara de beisura kapara. All right. So how do you get about the fact that how can it work out? So he says, Tirgamar Rav Chisda. So Rav Chisda explained, where did the storekeeper, where did the balabos, give the money so that they could buy food? He says, Vechen vodi hamakifa. He says, he gave it to a storekeeper who anyway gives the balabos credit. So that, what is the idea? The idea is that he's not paying him now for the food of Shviyas or anything like that, but instead he'll first pay it sometime in the future when it'll be no longer a problem with Shviyas or something like that. And so
he's got credit, right. He's been doing business and he's got credit.
Exactly, right. So Chedvoni Markifo, right, a storekeeper who gives credit to him, the Mishtamed Lay, and the storekeeper then, is indebted unto him. The cave and the Yuchila Kifo Kodele didn't got me. Because just as, the storekeeper is used to doing business all the time with him on credit, so this is how the dealer is there. That's how he acquired it. However, if it's a storekeeper who does not give credit, my, then what? So he says, mutar, permitted, ihofi, and in that case, right? While you're teaching me that he says, go out and eat with this dinner, or go out and drink with this dinner, then why doesn't he teach it in this particular way immediately? What kind of a case are we talking about? We're talking about with a storekeeper who gives credit to Mishtabit law, who therefore is literally indebted unto him. However, a storekeeper who does not give credit, then it's permitted. So tell me, and a storekeeper who doesn't give credit, he still isn't dependent upon him. He's still looking for the business even if he doesn't give any credit, right? So in that case, what? So we would say again, so that the money is tainted, right? Because it is Shviyas, right? So we have to look for a different explanation. Omar Rava, didn't Rava say, someone who says to another person, he says to him, give a money to so-and-so. A money is, that's the name of an amount of money, okay? It's equal to 100 zuz, okay? Remember, we talked about zuz before, so 100 zuz equals a money, okay? 100 bucks, okay?
Is this Babylonian money?
Yes, yes. Dinar was probably more used in Eretz Yisrael, because dinar is the Latin word denarius. The money is probably more Babylonian. Of course, the Hebrew word dinar means to count, so it could be related to that too. So, ten money to Floyd, you give a money to so and so. The Yiknu called the Chosai Lok, and whatever I have is Lachor Kadei. You can buy whatever that you need on me. Midin Orev. And this is by reason of the fact that I am responsible for, the money for you. Okay? So, Elo Marova, so Rava said, Leishdo Makifa, Leishdo Shay Makifa. He says, it doesn't really make any difference whether the storekeeper gives him credit or he doesn't give him credit. Afal Gav, the Bishabit Lay, even though he is literally enslaved him, even though he is dependent upon him, as long as he doesn't specify exactly this, but you know, he simply gave the money, gave it to them, said, you know, whatever you want to eat, drink, and so on and so forth. So as much as that's the case, then it's not prohibited. So now, coming back again, why should the storekeeper, why should the balabos be concerned? After all, he didn't specify, you mustn't buy whatever you want. So he says, right here. So Amar Apopo, Kigon Shehitim Loi Dinah. He gave them the dinner in advance. It's, I have to tell you, it's a little bit... it's a little confusing. I agree.
That's my favorite word.
It's a little confusing.
All
right. Right. But what are we trying to establish? What are they trying to establish? They're trying still to establish. Right. How could it work out that the storekeeper, that the balabos gives money and not be concerned with what they're going to spend it on if they're going to spend it on prohibited things? You understand? This is the question. How could he be?
But I have another question.
So, yes. So, therefore, we said what? So, he does business with whom? With a storekeeper who always lends on credit. And so, therefore, the storekeeper owes him a favor, but he'll look out for his own interests to make sure, that they're doing the right thing. This would seem to be the implication so far. But I don't have to tell you.
Really,
I don't give you 100% guarantee to that. Okay.
Right, so
yes,
my question is, if you have a worker that's working for you,
right?
He's done his day's work,
right?
You owe him the money.
Of course.
So
don't you have to pay him before the night until?
You have to pay him the
when
money.
It's night. At nightfall, you have to pay.
Right.
Right.
So,
okay. And if he's a person who works at night, then
at
daybreak,
you have to
pay.
Right. No, I don't have nothing to do with shoes, but suppose it's in the shoes.
Right.
Somebody has worked for you.
Right.
And don't you still have to pay them the money?
Of course.
Right.
Of course.
So I don't understand this business about not giving him the money, but giving it to the storekeeper and that whole business. I just don't understand.
Yeah.
He wants to prevent him from doing this.
He doesn't want to be directly responsible. Doesn't want to be directly responsible on his own.
So the question that
I'm coming to... He's trying to get out of that responsibility.
But can you break one law
to
obey another law? That's the question.
This
that
is
I'm
a
asking.
Very good question.
If you're breaking the law about
paying him,
if you're not giving him his money directly, then you're breaking that law that says you have, which is a Torah law.
Okay. You have big problems in that respect.
Is that a legitimate question?
Of course it's a legitimate question.
Yeah.
Yes. And I have to tell you that you have again and again discussion of the Talmud. I'll give you a little example. The Gemara uses an ox. Okay. You bring a sacrifice. Okay. So, sacrifice has to be eaten within a certain specified amount of time. And the Siddur, if you'll take a look, there is a passage called Ezechiel Ben Koman that's recited or read early in the morning before the regular dawn. Okay? So that people should at least feel that, as if they were sacrificing, bringing a sacrifice to the Beis HaMikdash when they dawn. Because the prayers take the place of the sacrifices that people would give back in the old days. Okay, so there, you take a look. There are certain types of sacrifices that only the kahanim can eat, and in some cases only male kahanim. Other cases, kahanim with their families can eat. there are other where the Israel, you know, the non-Kohanim eat, as for example what we call shlomim, peace offerings, todah, the Thanksgiving offering, okay, the maser, behemoth, that's a, well, if you have a herd of animals, so if at that year, for example, 10 new animals are born, so the 10th one has to be eaten as a sacrifice. It's called maser behemoth, okay? And the bottom boss, the person who owns it, actually is the one who has to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, and he enjoys a good fleshek meal over there, okay? Maser behemoth. So these all have certain specified amounts of time. In one case, it may be Shnei Yomim V'Laila Echad. In other words, if today is Wednesday and you bring the sacrifice, right? You could eat it Wednesday during the day, you could eat it Wednesday evening, and you could also eat it Thursday morning, Thursday afternoon as well, okay? So that's Shnei Yom V'Laila Echad. In other cases, it may be only Yom V'Laila. In other words, that day and also that same night. Okay? With the Korban Pesach, of course, there's an even further restriction because that has its own laws. But there, the Shechita has to take place when? In the afternoon, Bein Ha'abayim. And then in the evening, you have to eat it, and there's a time limit on that. What is the time limit for Korban Pesach?
Oh, by midnight,
exactly. This is why we try to finish our meal with the afikoman by midnight. Of course, with daylight time, so it gives us an extra hour. But this is the idea behind it, exactly.
You said other Kohanim.
Yeah.
I didn't understand that. Who are other Kohanim?
Either Levi'im or Yisraelim. Kohanim is specifically Kohanim. Okay.
Oh.
Anybody who's not a Kohen is either a Levi or a Yisrael.
Why are they called Kohanim?
They're called Kohanim because originally their function was to serve in the Beis HaMikdash.
They're
the descendants of Aaron or Kohen.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they're Kohanim. I can't be a Kohen. I wasn't born. My father wasn't a Kohen. So I'm not a Kohen. The greatest rabbis in the world are not necessarily Kohanim. You can understand that. But
the line is the family.
It's a family line, exactly. Oh, right. Yeah. So the point that I'm making, I wanted just to give you an example, in reference to what Sylvia asked, okay? All right. So, at any rate, what happens if you go beyond the time?
You go beyond what? Time?
You go beyond the time that's specified.
Midnight,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay? So the answer is, at that particular time, that is called nosar. In other words, it was left behind, and therefore it is called pigul. Right? It's pigulhu. It's already become an abomination. Pigul. Okay? So, what can you do? So the Torah, that's a negative commandment that you're not allowed to
eat.
Nosar. Okay? Not allowed to eat nosar. Anything beyond the specified time, it's now become nosar. The Torah says you're not allowed to eat nosar. That's a negative commandment. But along comes a positive commandment. It says, "Voyesh tisovrev," is to be burnt in fire. Okay? So, in other words, now we have a positive commandment in order to negate the effects of the negative commandment.
What was the positive commandment?
The positive commandment is to burn it. Torah specifies burn it.
But
the
leftovers have to
burn. Right. The leftovers have to be burnt.
Well, how does it do cancel out the negative commandment. I don't understand that.
The negative commandment is not to eat dosar. Not to eat dosar.
Yeah, okay.
Okay?
So it's not doing it. It's just carrying out the commandment by burning it.
But burning it, the Torah gave you an affirmative commandment in order to counteract. But it's specified. I mean, if the Torah didn't say it's to be burnt.
Yeah, it doesn't come along and say you can eat it after you eat
it
after
right.
It simply says don't eat it, so it doesn't tell you what to do with it. So
right.
Now you have
right.
The positive commandment.
So the positive commandment says to destroy it. I mean, to burn it. Right. It's the only way.
Yeah.
So therefore, we see that at times a positive commandment can set aside a negative commandment.
It didn't give you permission
really
to eat it.
But it really doesn't set it aside.
It didn't give you permission to eat it.
No.
It didn't set it aside. It just tells you what to do with it.
It doesn't set it aside.
But it's considered a mitzvah. It's an official mitzvah. That's what the point of our making. Right. So it is possible for one mitzvah to counteract a different mitzvah time. But we haven't gotten to the end of this discussion as yet. And
the one thing about paying is actually in the Torah.
What
about paying your workmen?
Definitely.
That's
beyond what you tell you, Sephora, right?
That's a mitzvah. That's
right.
A positive.
Most have shogs, Shakir, you have your
own
separate
subject.
You have a positive and a negative commandment. You have both of them.
So is that negative also a Torah commandment?
The negative is also you're not allowed to oppress the person who is working for you by refusing to pay the wages.
All right.
That's the negative commandment.
Yeah, but
the positive is in the day you have to the day that he works for you, you have to pay him.
Right. So now I'm trying to find out where does it fit. That you don't give him the money, but you're going to give it to the
storekeeper.
Where does that fit in?
Okay. The answer is that that way
is.
Is
that a, what kind of commandment is
our,
that?
It's not a commandment. Many of the restrictions, I mean, that you have, Shvius are really not just biblical, but in many cases.
Trying to
it's
avoid
rabbinic.
The Israelites.
It's rabbinic.
Yeah, yeah. So it's
okay,
in other words,
they extended it in order to make sure that it wouldn't be a violation. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So in this particular case, the question is whether he's immediately giving them the money in order to, in order to infringe upon the laws of Shavuos, for example, right?
Yeah.
Or is he doing it in a roundabout way where, he's not responsible and he doesn't have to worry, what they're going to do or something like that. In other words, they'll take the responsibility upon themselves. But there's always a question.
Yeah.
Are we contributing to somebody's wrongdoing? This is a big problem. Are we contributing? We know that there is a commandment, which says that you're not allowed to place a stumbling block. You're not allowed to place a stumbling block before a blind person, okay? And so, therefore, we have to try to avoid as much as we possibly can that people who are unaware, don't know, and so on and so forth, should still, not fall into the avera. Or
so
don't place them in case of temptation. Right. We have
the
Gemara, for example.
Don't leave them into sin.
Right.
Yeah, so it goes under that category. Yeah.
Remember we said that we learned, for example, to a nozir, a person who takes a vow upon himself, not to drink wine, not to eat grapes, etc. So we say to him, don't go near that vineyard. Go around it, so you can stay away from it. Okay?
Right.
Don't tempt him. Right. Don't put him into a case of temptation.
Take temptation away.
Right. Okay. Let's continue a little bit further. Omar Rav Kana. Rav Kana said, Amrita Neshamato, Kameh Rav Zvid Ben Dehardeh. says, I repeated this Torah in the presence of Rav Zavid of the Hardab. Formally, he said to him, Ehochi, if that's the case, Ad 22 Yechlu, Tzushasu, Vadi Pareya. Before even, you know, he says to them, go out and eat, go out and drink, and I'll pay the bill. What he should say is that go out and eat, go out and drink, and then I'll figure out, you know, what I have to pay for it.
Right.
In other words, not to do it immediately by saying, you know, here's your $10 over here, go and spend it on this and this and so on. Right. So, in other words, by delaying it, this is how he. You know, he should, you know, not be so responsible. So I'm away. So he says, he said to me, oh, so go ahead and learn that this is what it is. Who? Go out. Okay? Go, and I'll figure out afterwards what I owe. Ravashi Omar, Ravashi had a different interpretation. He said, Kigoy should not tell the Dosan Viyad. For example, he took and he gave it into his hand. So Amalei Rav Yemer the Ravashi, so Yemer said Ravashi Yehochi, that's the case. Ad Tonisu Yechlu Tzushesu Tzulu Yechlu Tzushesu Yehochi. Instead of saying, go out and eat, go out and drink, you should say, here, take this geld and eat whatever you want, right? Take this geld, drink whatever you want. This is what it should be. So Amalei, so he says to thee, okay, so learn it as Tulu Yechlu, Tulu Yishasu. Okay, go out, eat, go out, drink, etc., etc. So Yasav Rav Nachman, the Yulo, the Amimir, the Popi, the Yasav Rav Chia, the Rabbi, Gamayhu. So all these guys were together, all right. Rav Nachman was sitting, Ula was there, Avimai, the son of Pape, was there. Rav Chia Barabi was also with them. The Yaspe, the Pasidim, the Kovibayadahu. And they asked the following question. It says, Sechore Lishpa B'yay Nesach Mavu. What if a goy hire a Jew in order to go and break casks of Yay Nesach, obviously, to spill out, okay? Now, what happens if you spill out the Yayin Nesach over there? This is a good question.
What? That's what you
asked?
Just spill it out.
I mean, are you throwing it away or are you pouring it?
But that's the question. It's a good question. I mean, well, why would he tell him to do that? Okay. Mahu, what is it? So he says, me, Amin. So, however, they approach it from a different point of view. Okay, let's say, me, Amin. Do we say, cave on the right side because you may also? Oh, Dilma, called with a Tifla Shapir Bali. Are we going to say that the Jew who is hired to break the cast of Yayin Nesach, right, was hired for that purpose?
Yeah.
Okay. So, does he really want that there should be plenty of casts around? Why? So he can make more money. He'll do more money, so he wants it to stay around. So
I don't know.
Okay. Do we say that? Or Dilmov, or perhaps we should say, call him a Yute Tiflo Shapidami. The more that you get rid of a Tifla is better. The question is, what is Tifla? The answer is, Tifla is something that's beers. No good, and obviously it means Aveda Zorah in this particular case, right? Okay. So the more Yayin Nesach that you get rid of, the better off it is, right?
Yayin Nesach is good wine.
It's good wine, but the point is you don't want to contribute more. You don't want to contribute more Yayin Nesach to the world. You don't break it, right? So maybe it's a mitzvah for a Jew to break it, because if it spills it, then the guy is not going to use that wine for Yedis.
They won't use it for rivalry.
Don't ask me why he would hire him to break it. I don't know.
That's so far-fetched. I can't believe
we're
discussing it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
nothing better
to discuss. If you hired him, go break this and spill out the wine. Maybe the wine turned sour at first. I don't know what happened over there. But he hired him for that. So the questions, you know, a lot of these things are theoretical questions. You have to realize.
That's some theory.
Is it good for the Jew to want it? In other words, does he want the cast of the wine? Because the more that there are casts of wine, then the more guilt he'll get for breaking it, you know, get more schar, right? Or the tefillah, by the way, I have to tell you, among many Jewish circles, the word tefillah in Europe became a word that is associated when you pass by the Tiflin. It's not Tiflin. Tiflin. This word that you see over here. They mean the church. A church, which they identified with the Veda Sora, obviously. Okay.
Tiflin.
A Tiflin, right. Yeah. A Jew should walk on the other side of the street, not in front of the Tiflin. You ever hear that?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah,
don't go in front of them.
Right.
Boy, they go down another
take
street.
Right. Nobody ever said to us to do it that way. We just learned it. I don't remember ever being told, but I certainly learned about it.
Right, because people, they felt that.
That's
the word that you see over here, Tifla. Okay. Obviously, it's associated with Abed Zara. Okay. Oh, dear Lord, call them the Yutay Tifla Shabbat of it. Maybe the more that you get rid of this wine so that it wouldn't be used for Abed Zara is better, right? Rav Nachman said, Yishmael, the Tave Yolot Racha. He says, let him break those casks, and he should have a bracha. Okay, with that word of Tave Yolot Racha, he should have a bracha. I think we'll stop at this point. All right, first of all, we identify Avodah Zarah with the very bottom Samach Gimel Amud Beis, ready in a moment to start Samach Dalet Amud Aleph. And again, I didn't give you the date. The date is the 20th of June, right? 20th of June, the year 2007. Okay. So, parallel to what we just listened to, the fact that the Jew was hired in order to break the casks of wine, so could he accept payment for the fact that the wine was Avodah Zarah? And of course we learned if you're dealing with Avodah Zarah, you don't get paid, right? That wine, that money is useless. But Rav Nachman said, well, in this particular case, I gesult have sein cup, he says, maybe it's getting rid of more Avodah Zarah than wine. Okay, so for that, in that case, he says he wouldn't deny him the wages. So a similar case now we come to. Okay, what is it? It says, Lema, shall we say, Messiahle, there's a supporting Mishnah for that. The Mishnah says, Ein odrin im o'evet kachovim b'kilayim. All right, now we know what kilayim are. Kilayim, as we said, is a mixture of vegetables growing in the garden. Of course, the worst type of one happens to be kilei hakevim, where if wheat would be grown together in the same orchard, right next to where a grapevine is, so that already, that's been all right. So, in other words, the Torah prohibits that. But the Rabbanan, they prohibit any mixture of vegetables growing in the garden. Now, again, how should you properly do it without infringing upon kilayim? The answer is to make a plot here, a little plot here, a little plot here. But there should be a separation between where you're planting this, where you're planting that, and where you're planting the other. Okay, yes.
Is this follow the same concept as Shatness?
Yes. Correct.
Tell me
because you hit upon it. Shatnez is called Kilei HaBeged, in other words, the Kilayim of a garment. And this is, you know, Kilei HaKerem, in other words, what grows in the field. Okay? So, but it's sort of the same general principle of Kilayim,
okay,
not the Beged.
So you're not supposed to commingle.
Right, right.
All right, now tell me something. What
but remember, with Shatnez specifically, the prohibition is on wool and flax together.
Now, what about, you know, today, in today's world,
right,
for example, nectarine,
yeah,
is a combination of two, it's a hybrid, two fruits. Is that prohibited?
By now, it's become so common that that's no longer considered.
You know, all the games
right,
they play with cattle and, you know, types of livestock.
Yeah,
you're
right.
Breeding them.
Well, as long as they're not breeding, let's say, a lamb and a goat or something like
yeah,
that, or a calf or something like that.
Yeah.
But
I
mean, within the same species, that's all right.
But, you know, conceivably, you could have a hybrid species.
If yeah,
two,
but if they're
two
both, well, right, let's
together,
say they're both a sheep,
natural,
right, one type of sheep and another type of sheep, but still it's a sheep, you see. So
yeah,
that's not Kilayim in that
but
particular
case. But if you
have,
like, two types of seeds.
Right.
Two types of plants. And
right.
Just
exactly. Right. So.
Oh, shotness is an animal and something that grows, which is also
well, shotness specifically is a garment, whatever
garment,
it may be.
Yeah.
Something
yeah,
that you wear, or even if you use it as a blanket or something like that, it should not be a mixture of linen and yeah, has to be linen and wool. That is what the Torah prohibited. What we use today, cotton, it's not affected really by it. And certainly all the synthetics that we use wouldn't be affected. Right.
If you were, you know, repairing your talus,
yeah,
talus is made out of wool. You have to be very careful of the thread you've got.
Okay. Talus is made out of wool. Obviously, you're not going to put in linen tzitzis, you understand? It has to be wool tzitzis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, wool tzitzis can be put in even into a garment which is not made out of wool. I mean, that's why you see, well, you know, let's say a rayon talus or something like that, you
mm-hmm,
know, and it has wool wool strings. That's okay. Or a rayon talus can have also rayon fringes. That's permitted also. But
like I have something coming off, you know, it's kind of like a patch down at the
yeah,
end.
Yeah, right. Well,
and,
if you want to
you
use
know,
a cotton
and,
thread.
And the threads are broken.
Yeah.
So I have to make sure I get wool thread. Is that so?
Yeah, are you talking about the garment or are you talking about the fringes?
Not the tzitzis,
the themselves.
The garment.
The garment itself. You could use cotton to do it.
I can use any kind of thing.
Cotton, silk.
Cotton, yeah.
Cotton or silk, yeah, that you could do. Yeah, because it's not actually shotless in that case.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are some, I don't have to tell you, who always look down upon that too, you know. But they're already being more machmir than what the regulations call for. Yes, yes. The girdle of the priest, Kohen, actually was shot. That happened to be an exception to the rule. I mean, they permitted it because the Torah again specified that it had to be Shesh Moshe Zor, which means, you know, that it had to be linen that was woven in
right,
into the
right,
the wool and so on. Right. So that's
so
already different. Sorry, that was an exception.
Yeah.
Right. Right. But if it was not Mishas Avoda, in other words, if he wore it, not at the time when he was actually officiating in the Beis HaMikdash, then in that case it would be wrong. Right. It would be Lavera. Right.
Yeah.
What does the word Kilayim mean?
Kilayim?
What is it actually, the literal translation?
We say a mixture.
Huh?
A mixture of some
mixture?
Sort. It's not the usual word that means to mix, but specifically for the types that we call Kilayim. Right. because the root itself is probably from the same root, like, you know, Kaf Lamed Aleph, which means to bind, to withhold something, to restrain, or something like that. So that, for example, a prison is a Bet HaKele, okay? Same root letters, okay? Or we say every night, what? Every morning, right? Right? That God, being merciful, right, He forgives our sins and He said not destroy us, right? What does it mean? Ator Hashem is about many. Thou, O Lord, will not withhold your mercies from them. So the word has the implication to restrain, to withhold, and so on. Okay.
I mean, I know how it's implied in it. I'm interested in it.
But it's a technical term. It's a technical term. Exactly. Okay. So, problem is, in general, can a person benefit from doing something which is prohibited? You understand that?
Yeah.
Now, this is really the underlying problem that we have over here. Just as we had the same problem with the guy, you know, who's working with casks of wine, with Avodah Zorah. Okay, in Esau, right? So, can he receive wages for doing something which is contrary to the law of the Torah?
Sure. Yeah,
that's exactly what the point is over here.
Right, exactly.
So,
yeah.
So, here we have the case of, okay, Kilayim, right? Ein odrin nimhoevet kechavim bekilayim. Okay, which means that you're not allowed to hoe together with a non-Jewish worker, an idolater to be more exact, right? When it comes to kilayim. Of course, whose kilayim are we talking about? If it's Jewish kilayim, I don't have to tell you, you're not allowed to let it grow in the first place. And if you see that something is sprouting which doesn't belong over there, what do you expect it to do? Pull it out. Get rid of it. Destroy it, right? It's a Mishnah at the beginning of Shkolim, which says that the first day of Shkolim they would make public announcements in the various shuls, every place else, right? Al HaShkolim V'al HaKilayim. In other words, the Shkolim, it's time to prepare to send in your yearly shekel, right? And the other one is also, by this time, at the beginning of Adar, there it's Israel, I don't have to tell you, you know, you can already begin to see the early sprouts from the ground. So if you see that you have kibayim over there, pull them out, destroy them. Okay. So obviously we're not talking about kilayim that were in a field belonging to a Jew, but who were they belonging to? They're belonging to the Oved Kechavim, right? To the non-Jew in this particular case. And the question is, can the Jew be hired to do this kind of work and receive wages when he's dealing with something which he, as a Jew, should not have anything to do with it? See, this is the question. What's the problem with hoeing? Hoeing is that you're preparing the ground, you know, in order to make it better receive water and so on, to be able, you know, to grow better. So you're encouraging the growth of kilayim, not destroying it, right?
And you can't graft something onto another.
Right. So can he be paid for that? And now I'm on Okrin Imoy, can they be Uthes Hatiflet, right? However, if the guy tells him, what, I want you to help me in order to get rid of this, to uproot it, then in that case, can the Jew be paid for uprooting it? Okay? And of course, what would be Rav Nachman's opinion in this particular case? If we go to the parallel of what happened before, with the guy with the cask of blood, would say, yeah, Tovei Lo Bracha, right? This is what it should be, correct. All right. So, but we want to know, was the same thing hold true over here as it did in the previous case? So it says, Sivaru, of course, by the way, we're on Samach Dalet, right? Dalet and Aleph, okay? Svaruha. So, you know, they started to talk about this problem, about uprooting the Kilayim, and they want to know, Homani, who is the person whose opinion that, you know, is that you could pay the man, could pay the Jewish worker for doing this kind of work. So they say, Rabbi Akiva. This represents the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. The Omar who said, Hamekayim b'kilayim leike. Now, it's a funny thing. How can you say it's an agreement with Rabbi Akiva? Because, first of all, take it literally. What does it say literally? It says if a person preserves kilayim, then in that case, he deserves to get malchus, right? In other words, he's to be whipped because he's violating a law in the Torah. The Torah prohibits it, and according to Rabbi Akiva, and in general, I mean, we learned, if you remember, Malchus, and there we saw, you know, Elohein HaLokin, you know, the last chapter over there dealt with who gets malchus and so on, for what offenses, etc., etc., how malchus are to be administered and so on and so forth, right? So we saw at that particular point, you know, that according to the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, who's very strict, he says that if you violate a law in that particular case, you get malchus for having violated it. So, if that's the case,
39.
Pardon me?
You don't go beyond 39.
Yeah, that's correct. But also, the Gemara in Yom Malchus says that you can't give more Malchus than a person can actually take. Mm-hmm. If the doctor does, I say, no, that he can't stand 39, or kill him, then in that particular case, they have to cut down the amount. And it's always, however, a number which is divisible by 3.
We're talking about whipping,
right. With a strap, right, exactly.